This week on Rabble Radio, we feature a segment from our most recent Off the Hill political panel. This month, our theme was Off the Hill, Labor in High Gear for Action and Change. Recent months have seen significant activity in Canada's labor movement, including a public service strike, actions against austerity across the country, and the CLC convention in Montreal. This month, our panel dove into recent developments and wondered what's next for the labor movement in Canada. Our panel included MP Alexandra Boularis, Ontario School Board Council of Unions President Laura Walton, policy expert and Rabble columnist Chuka Ijekam, and Rabble parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg, hosted by Robin Brown and Libby Davies. Here is a small clip from this month's Off the Hill panel. Take a listen.
Alexandra, you've had yourself a very rich and active history within the labor movement, and now you're the key spokesperson for the NDP on labor issues. So I'd like to get your initial thoughts on the state of labor these days, for you to talk about what are the current challenges that you see. And if you can give us a quick update on your work to bring in anti-scab legislation, that would be great too. So take it away.
Thanks, Libby. Thanks for the invitation. I'm so happy to be here with you all. And, It was just a few questions, but big questions. Yep. How long do I have? 2 hours? 3 hours? No, I'm joking. But yes, it's really interesting what's happening right now with the labor movement, and we saw a new generation taking care of the movement and leading the movement, and we see that at the CLC in Quebec, at the CSN. And FTQ, which is a Quebec Federation of Labor, with a new president, the first woman, an Indigenous woman, now is the president of the QFL or FTQ. So that we can see, and with the PSAC strike, the biggest strike against one employer in the history of Canada. It's not nothing. And I saw people in Montreal and in Ottawa, on picket lines with a lot of energy and trust and hope, and I think that we are at a pivotal time, also because of the shortage of workers on the work market. So it's interesting because there's a new balance and there's the position that is advantageous for the workers and the organization. But there's also a lot of challenges. The unions are not there with high tech jobs. Artificial intelligence, video games. It's difficult in those sectors. A lot of freelancers are not real freelancers. They have only one employer and they are kind of exploited workers that are not organized. So I think the challenges from my point of view is also to organize the non-organized right now. And but we see good stories with Amazon, with young workers that want to make a change and defend their rights. So challenge is the migrant workers. 500,000 of them are now working in Canada and they have no status and no rights at all. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to organize them, but they are there and they are part of our economy, and we have to address that issue and to create new ways to make sure that we will give them a status and make sure that they have the right to organize. So I think that those are the challenges that the labor movement have right now. And I can go political maybe a little bit later about the polls and the opinions of unionized workers. But if you ask me about the anti-scab legislation, it's one of the 27 items we negotiated with the minority Liberal government. It is very important because the Liberals have always refused, and you know that, Libby, to vote in favor in the Parliament. So we have succeeded to twist their arm and to put that in the 27 items accord that we have. Now they are dragging their feet a little bit, but they are Liberals, so that we need to continue to push and to put pressure on them. But I'm quite hopeful that at the beginning of the fall, we will see a text and a legislation table in the House of Commons.
Thank you to Alexander for a great overview. And I'm really glad to hear that the anti-scab legislation finally might make it through the House of Commons, because it's been, well, a very long time in coming. So now it's a great segue over to Laura. Just to sort of pick up this question, Laura, as the president of the Ontario School Board Council of Unions, representing 55,000 education workers who are member QP, how are you seeing the key issues? Like, what do you have your eye on the provincial scene there in Ontario? Because it's been very active there too.
Yeah, you know, I think coming off of the fall where we saw 55,000 education workers walk off the job illegally to protest Doug Ford's anti-worker bill, you know, that used the notwithstanding clause to interrupt the freely negotiated process. I think the labor movement in Ontario, and in fact across the country, seems to be on, in this momentum that is really exciting. And for those of us who have spent some time in the labor movement, you know, I think we've been waiting for this to happen. You know, it's been a coming together of sorts. And it's interesting because the issues that Alexandra raised are some of the same things that I'm having my eye on. I think, first of all, the internal organizing that we're seeing within unions, you know, now recognizing that our power in unions and in the labor movement stems from the workers, and having that open transparency with workers, centering workers in these fights, is super key and really important for us to be moving forward. And, you know, that was a bit of the secret to our success, was centering the workers in the fight, having those one-on-one conversations. I think building upon that internal organizing is the organizing of new workers. You know, we mentioned Amazon, but also Starbucks. We just recently had our first Starbucks in Ontario become unionized. We've seen many of them out west. The steelworkers are very much in that, making that happen, which is exactly what we need. You know, looking for alternate places where these workers are not organized. And I think the migrant workers are another area where we need to have steps in place and be talking to them and providing them, because we know as workers, our strength is when we come together in a union. And then I think the third piece that is really super exciting for me is the joining of labor with the community. Organizing doesn't stop at the doorstep of the union hall. Organizing must include our communities, and that includes our faith groups. It includes our, you know, extracurricular activities. It includes, you know, different places in where organizing typically has not been done, or where labor has not been welcomed. You know, and I just recently had the opportunity to be speaking at the Ukrainian Labor Temple in Winnipeg, you know, where they were the heart of where the RCMP stormed them during the, you know, general strike of 1919. And it really hit me. That was the secret behind, you know, the 1919 strike, was we didn't stop talking just at the hall. We moved it out into the community. And what I'm seeing in Ontario with the Ontario Federation of Labor, you know, with the Enough is Enough campaign, and I'm also seeing it, you know, across this country, where labor is recognizing we need to be in the community and we need to be lifting up these community issues, because workers' issues are community issues and community issues are worker issues.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just a quick follow-up from that, Laura. You did a recent interview with Rabble.ca, and you said the possibility of a general strike could, quote, be on the horizon, which I think is intriguing and exciting. And so just wondering if you could elaborate on your thoughts on that.
Well, in Ontario in November, we were on the cusp of a general strike. You saw in November, on November 7th, the coming together of both private and public sector unions, community members, when Doug Ford had attacked education workers in Ontario, had used the notwithstanding clause to jam through an imposed collective agreement and rip away our right to strike and our right to freely negotiate. And it was that coming together of labor that forced the government that was newly elected with a majority, again, to actually step back, repeal their law within 2 days, which was, you know, a remarkable feat. It hasn't been done in recent time. And I'm extremely proud of the workers that came together to make that happen. OPSU joined our lines as well. Like, it was a real coming together. You saw Unifor, you saw steel workers coming together and being ready and on the cusp and recognizing that this may be what we need to do. And I will say this time and time again, you know, the environment, the conditions are right to happen, but it takes a lot of work. And I believe that there will be a general strike, but it's not going to be led by leaders. It's going to be demanded by workers that have had enough of corporations and of governments and are saying, take your foot off our throats. We are done. Our labor has value and we're speaking up about it. And I think what you're starting to see is this organic coming together of workers across sectors, across, you know, private and public. You know, I often say, it doesn't matter what flag you fly. It doesn't matter what job you work in. All labor has value. And when we come together under that mantra, that's when you'll see real change happen. And I do believe that that may be in the form of a general strike. It's going to take a heck of a lot of work to get there. But it's something that I'm in, you know, to work with everyone to make sure that happens and that workers are recognized, not just in Ontario, but, you know, not just in Canada, but globally as well. And I think you're seeing that somewhat in the UK, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Laura. It's great.
Yeah, it is. No, thank you. So we want to bring Chuck in right now, but just quickly, I just want to go back to Alexandre for a second. Because Alexandre, the anti-scab legislation, can you just quickly tell people exactly how that would work? And the reason I ask that is, again, you know, it's full disclosure. I was on strike. I was a federal public servant. And we heard interviews afterwards with a scab saying, who broke the picket line, the whole bit. So I'm just kind of curious, how would it work exactly?
But if you look at the Quebec provincial legislation and the BC legislation, it's something that we are looking to implement at the federal level. So all the workers and in the federal sectors, we're talking about telecommunication, we're talking about ports, airplanes, trains. That's a big one. You know, if you go on strike, the company cannot hire somebody to do your job. It's just forbidden. It's just illegal. And you have processes to call inspectors to make sure that it's not the case if they are trying to do it. What we want to be sure that it is in the legislation is the notion of, because we are on Zoom and Facebook Live, in some jobs, sometimes you can do it from home with your computer or your cell phone. So we want to be sure that online work is included in the definition of replacement workers, because otherwise in some sectors, can you imagine telecommunications, you know, then the right to strike means nothing. And right now at the federal level, it's really unbalanced, because if you can hire people to replace workers that are on strike, which is the case right now at the Port of Quebec, and what was the case in a maritime company called Océan in Sorel, and scabs were there, they were hired, and they were paid three times what the workers on strike were asking for in their negotiations. It was deliberately an attempt to break the local union. It was a steelworker local for Océan Maritime. And that would be just illegal. And it's, you know, it forced the employer to negotiate in good faith. And most of the time, the strikes or the lockouts are shorter and with less violence, because the balance on the negotiating table is there. About PSAC strike, it's a little bit different, because there's a different legislation for public servants. So we want to be sure that the law will include also federal employees and public servants, because otherwise it's just going to be private sectors, and we don't want that.
Gotcha. Okay, no, thank you for that clarification. Mm. All right, Chuka. Given what we've heard about the challenges being faced by the labor movement, both nationally and locally, do you see signs of broader alliances and solidarity? And I'm saying either like good signs on the left or bad signs on the right. And I say that because in our December Off the Hill panel, you mentioned that the political right sometimes benefits from social, economic, and political disruption. So.
Yeah, so I think of course anytime the far right will exploit any crisis or upheaval to advance their ends, but I don't know that unions are a priority organizing target for the far right. Regarding what I just referred to, them exploiting disasters and whatnot, I was more referring to the sort of thing that was reported about a week ago in Grist, which is about far right militias masquerading as disaster response groups in service of propagandizing about white nationalism. So they are explicitly organizing as disaster response groups in service of that. So it's a very obviously response to a crisis. On the topic of solidarity, I think that there are such indications. The example in Ontario, I think, is incredibly encouraging, not just what happened with the teachers, but also the forthcoming Enough is Enough Day that the OFL is sponsoring and sort of organizing in service of. I think that additionally, the sort of persistence and prominence of labor stories in the news, I think, keeps the issue kind of top of mind for people who don't interact with it directly. There's labor stories in frequently in the news from Canada, from the US, from France, from the UK. And a lot of these are, the union striking for the first time in 70 years and in 100 years sometimes. And I think that, or my estimation would be that if somebody reads that a union is striking for the first time in decades, I don't think their immediate reaction is that the workers are being unreasonable. Overall, I think that at very least there's an option or there's an opportunity to organize in service of a really compelling kind of solidarity. I think that, the crisis of neoliberalism is reaching a flashpoint. And speaking of the labor movement, I think there's a growing contingent within it that is in favor of explicit conflict with capital, explicitly acting against owners, profiteers, acting against collected interests and hoarded wealth. And so I think that, insofar as the labor movement has taken up those politics in past eras and throughout, in the post-Mulroney, post-Reagan era, post-Thatcher and whatnot, that has sort of fallen away from political discourse across the board. I think that there is support for that, both within the labor movement and increasingly within the public. There are a lot of people who have those ideas, who have those sentiments, but aren't part of a union because it has been so decimated within society. And I did want to make one point just about AI. There actually are 150 workers in Nairobi that work for ChatGPT that are unionizing right now. And what they've been subjected to is horrific. They were forced, they were paid, I think, $2 or something like that an hour, just pitiful or deplorably low wages to sift through the input sets of content that the owners of ChatGPT or the business that is making it available. These workers had to sift through the content throughout the internet that was being input into this machine to attempt to train it on various language models and all of that, and they manually removed the things that were too racist, too misogynistic, too violent, things like that. So they had to comb through the worst aspects of the internet day after day, hour after hour, and were paid horrifically low wages for it. And so it's a disgusting practice, a disgusting business, in my opinion. And it's exciting that the workers are unionizing.
Now, I guess I want to sort of move a little bit over to Carl, because what we try to do is also connect that activism to how that plays out in parliamentary politics, right? In the political world on Parliament Hill. So over to you now, Carl. And I guess what I want to ask you is, what influence does organized labor have on the political agenda in Ottawa? Now, in the past, we've seen big campaigns to bring in, for example, anti-scab legislation, which we talked about earlier. We've seen other campaigns around fair wages and establishing a minimum federal wage. So I guess the question is, are labor issues something that Parliament pays attention to? And on today's Parliament Hill, who is fighting for labor and worker rights? How is that playing out? So, Carl, just your thoughts on that.
Well, to start with, we have Alexandre here on the panel, so I can't say that his party is not fighting for labor and worker rights. Obviously the original CCF going way, way, way back into the 30s and later on was in favor of workers and unions. at a time when it wasn't that popular and it wasn't that widely accepted. And then the NDP was started as a joint project of the Canadian Labour Congress and the old CCF. So it was a Labour-based party from the beginning. I would say that people should bear in mind that when the NDP forms a government provincially, as they did in Ontario for a while at one time, and as they are now in British Columbia, they sometimes resemble a little bit the Liberal Party that's now in power in Ottawa, in that they're hypothetically and theoretically and sentimentally in favor of labor, but then when they get into a particular negotiation with a particular group of workers, they are the managers, and they also feel that they have to represent the management side of the argument, and there are inevitable tensions and conflicts. So in this, in the current government, I mean, we had an interesting incident at Rabble when Patty Hyde was the Minister of Labor. She was Minister of Labor a few years back, and that was her first job in this cabinet, and she's kind of jumped quickly to a bunch of other positions. But she made a point of writing an article. The only time I've seen a Liberal cabinet minister all the time I've been involved in Rabble write to Rabble and say, I'd like an article published in Rabble, because she wanted to reach out to Rabble's readers, and she thought a lot of union activists read Rabble or are involved with Rabble, and she wanted to essentially boast that the government was passing pro-labor legislation. In particular, she wanted to boast that the government was finally adopting what they call the International Labor Organization's Resolution 98. That's very technical. The International Labor Organization is the United Nations body, similar to the World Health Organization, that looks after and tries to organize around labor rights. And that particular resolution prevents governments, or it enjoins governments and private employers not to penalize people, to fire somebody, say, to put it simply, to fire a person who starts organizing a union as organizations like the FAST.
Small clip from our most recent Off the Hill political panel, Off the Hill, Labor and High Gear for Action and Change. To watch the full video of our panel, please visit Rabble TV or Rabble's YouTube channel. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, we'll hand it over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week in national politics, David Johnston, former Governor General and Special Rapporteur on Foreign Interference in Canada's Elections, released his long-awaited first report. In his report, Johnston said that while countries like China were actively trying to interfere in Canadian politics, that these efforts had not influenced the results of the 2019 and 2021 federal elections. Johnston refused to make the evidence supporting his findings public due to their classified nature, and recommended against a public inquiry on the matter. Opposition party leaders slammed Johnston and his report. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh called for an independent inquiry. Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre questioned Johnston's closeness with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. Johnston, a member of the Trudeau Foundation, once lived within 50 kilometers of Trudeau when he was a boy. Prime Minister Trudeau invited Poilievre to be screened for a security clearance so he can view the classified materials in Johnston's report, but Poilievre refused. In labor news, members of the Alliance of Canadian Cinema, Television, and Radio Artists, ACTRA, are marking 13 months since they have been locked out from working on commercials commissioned by the Institute of Canadian Agencies, ICA, which is one of the largest advertising agencies in the country. The Institute commissions commercials for major Canadian brands like Canadian Tire, Rogers, Wendy's, and H&R Block. The dispute is due to ICA's inconsistent usage of conditions and pay rates as established by the National Commercial Agreement. Eleanor Noble, national president of ACTRA, argues that ICA's behavior amounts to union busting, saying, quote, "We're a union. We want to work union, and we didn't agree with opting in and opting out. That's a tactic to bust the union," end quote. In other labor news, during their convention, the Canadian Labor Congress hosted a panel to discuss how technology can be used to help unions organize. Sarah Beth Ryther from Trader Joe's United and Josh Thole, who helped minor league baseball players get their first collective agreement, joined the panel. Tools have emerged in recent years like Action Builder and the Action Network. Both are digital web-based platforms that support union organization and the promotion of other progressive causes. Another tool Ryther cited as helping change the way unions organize is social media, pointing to the success that Starbucks United Twitter account had in helping to build that union from scratch. Go to rabble.ca and search for our activist toolkit for more information on union organizing and other tips for progressive activism. In health news, national politics reporter Stephen Wenzel reported this week on the ongoing harm being created by Canada's toxic street drug supply. According to data recently released by the BC Coroner's Office, approximately 6 people are dying in that province every day due to the consumption of toxic drugs. Nearly 600 people died in the province from an overdose in the first quarter of 2023. Meanwhile, the issue of a safe drug supply and supervised consumption sites are still being used as a political football by right-wing politicians. Former Vancouver City Councillor and activist Jean Swanson argues that there is not much difference between a safe drugs consumption site and a bar serving alcohol. And finally, Rabble columnist Lois Ross is warning that government deregulation will make it harder for farmers and the public to identify genetically modified seeds and other foods. In early May, the Federal Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food, Marie-Claude Bibeau, approved the Canadian Food Inspection Agency's recommendations on gene-edited seed, essentially deciding not to regulate these seeds, and also not to let consumers know when seeds have been gene-edited. Instead, the decision to inform consumers if their product is genetically modified will be left to the product's developers. In response to this decision, Genetically Modified Organism Awareness Group, Vigilance OGM, is planning demonstrations at the offices of members of parliament across Quebec on May 26. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please remember to rate, review, and share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you, as always, to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
For 40 years, the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, aka SFPIRG, has been helping students build communities at SFU. Campus organizations like Out on Campus and Embark developed out-of action groups at SFPIRG. Action groups are one of the ways that student activists can take action for change. Visit us at www.sfpirg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about starting your own action group today.